Imagine, like, handing your most literal-minded intern a corporate credit card, giving them a slap on the back, and just tell them to go, play the crypto markets.
I mean, I'd probably lose some sleep over that.
Right, you'd be terrified.
Yeah.
But that is exactly what Coinbase just enabled for artificial intelligence.
Yeah, it's actually happening.
It is. And welcome, by the way, to today's deep dive. We are cracking open the June 12th, 2026 edition of the Tekin Knight Tech newsletter today. And there is really no warm-up.
No, we are jumping right in.
Exactly. For those of you listening, we're looking at AI getting its very own financial wallet, Xbox, like floating the idea of commercial interruptions right in the middle of your $70 video games, and the James Webb Space Telescope catching a galaxy in the actual act of cosmic suicide.
Which is just wild to think about. And, while those might sound to you like completely separate corners of the internet and the universe, honestly, there's a distinct through line here for you to watch
Yeah,
today.
definitely.
It's basically a story about agency and resources. We are watching digital platforms cross this line from being, passive tools you use to active autonomous entities that actually do things on your behalf.
Which is a huge leap.
It really is. And simultaneously, we're seeing the extreme lengths that industries and, well, even the cosmos itself will go to when the fuel they desperately need starts running out.
Man, that is, let's actually start right there with that shift toward agency.
Yeah.
Because the Coinbase story, it feels like we just kicked open a door we might not be able to close.
I think that's a very fair assessment.
So Coinbase has officially launched Coinbase for Agents. They're using something called the Model Context Protocol, or MCP, to allow AI assistants like ChatGPT and Claude to just autonomously trade crypto.
Yeah, and the volume is already there.
Right. The newsletter notes they've already processed $50 million in agent volume. And the user experience is just natural language.
It's so
You
sophisticated.
literally just type, if Bitcoin drops below $60,000, buy $1,000, and the AI just executes it.
Yeah.
Okay, but let's unpack this for a second. Until now, AI has mostly been a conversational tool, right? It gives you advice, but you have to pull the trigger. How is it actually interfacing with a financial ledger?
Well, so that's where the Model Context Protocol, the MCP, really comes in. You can think of MCP as kind of like a standardized universal translator.
Okay, a translator.
Yeah, it allows an AI model to securely connect to external tools and data sources. So instead of just generating a text response that says, Bitcoin is at $59,000, you should probably buy, the MCP allows the AI to securely access Coinbase's trading API.
And it just buys it.
Exactly. It actually places the order. What's fascinating here is that we are witnessing a fundamental paradigm shift. I mean, AI is crossing the threshold from being just an information processor to an autonomous economic actor.
But the risks here, I mean, they seem incredibly high. Like I said, an intern with a credit card is one thing, but an algorithm executing trades at machine speed.
It's a whole different ballgame.
Right. So what happens when the AI hallucinated? Or worse, what if someone uses a prompt injection attack?
Oh, the prompt injections are the scary part.
Yeah, like basically sneaking a hidden command into a seemingly normal prompt, or even just a web page the AI is reading, tricking it into manipulating its trading behavior.
Which happens more than people think.
Right, so if my AI drains my wallet because it read, like, a malicious line of code hidden in a random Reddit post, who is actually liable?
And that is the great unanswered question right now. It's this massive regulatory gray area, like, are you responsible because you set the initial
I
parameters?
mean, I'd hope not.
All right, but is the developer of the AI model responsible for the hallucination? Or is Coinbase responsible for executing the flawed
That's
command?
going to be a nightmare in court.
Oh, absolutely. No one knows yet. But, the flip side is the economic incentive driving this. An AI agent provides emotion-free 24/7 trading.
No panic selling.
Exactly. It doesn't panic sell when the market suddenly dips, and it doesn't suffer from FOMO when a coin spikes. It strictly executes the parameters. But the danger isn't necessarily just one AI making a bad trade.
It's the scale.
Yes, it's the systemic risk. Imagine a flash crash caused by, like, thousands of AI agents all reacting identically to the exact same market event, just amplifying the volatility before a human can even hit the kill switch.
Man, which really poses a direct question to you listening. Are you ready to let an algorithm execute real-world financial consequences on your behalf?
Because $50 million in initial volume suggests a lot of people are perfectly fine with blind adoption.
Yeah, they really are. But, if you were giving AI the keys to your crypto wallet, it's really not a huge leap to see why developers want to give it the keys to your entire professional life.
Oh, the drive for autonomous agency definitely doesn't stop at crypto trading.
Not at all.
If an AI can handle complex financial routing, it can certainly handle, you know, your calendar, your coding environment, and your emails.
Exactly. Which brings us to OpenAI's internal project. It's codenamed Aria. And the stated goal here is to transform ChatGPT from a conversational interface into like an all-in-one super app.
They want to be the whole ecosystem.
Right. They want to integrate coding tools, third-party services, autonomous agents, all under one roof. And the stakes here are tied directly to their valuation. I mean, OpenAI is sitting at a roughly $850 billion pre-IPO valuation.
Which is just an astronomical number.
It really is. And to pull Aria off, they've tapped Ibal Sotio as the project lead. This is the architect behind Codex and GitHub Copilot.
Which, we should note, is already a massive commercial success.
It's huge. It's generating over $100 million annually. But the explicit target for Aria, they want to take down Google Workspace and Microsoft 365. Ars Technica wrote a piece on this, and they bluntly declared chat is dead.
Wow. Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, the underlying math here really dictates their strategy. I mean, an $850 billion valuation simply cannot be sustained by charging consumers $20 a month for a chatbot.
It's just not enough volume.
No,
yeah.
Not even close. OpenAI desperately needs high-margin enterprise-level contracts. We're talking $500 a seat enterprise software deployments.
Right.
And Sotio wasn't chosen at random for this. He proved with Codex that AI could sit, you know, invisibly inside a software developer's workflow.
So the developer didn't even have to change how they work.
Exactly. The developer didn't have to switch tabs or open a new app. The AI just anticipated what they needed and generated the code. So his mandate now is to achieve that exact same indispensability for the general knowledge worker. They want Aria to be the operating system of the workday.
Okay, but here's where it gets really interesting to me. Isn't there a massive contradiction here?
How do you mean?
This sounds like the classic Swiss Army knife dilemma. Like, think about why ChatGPT won the world in the first place.
No.
It was simple.
Exactly. It was precisely because of its simplicity. A blank white screen, a text box, and it talks back. If you start bolting on enterprise features, third-party integrations, calendar management, and, you know, autonomous task routing, doesn't it just become another bloated piece of enterprise software?
That is a huge risk, yeah.
Like, if I just want a quick summary of a PDF, and suddenly I have to navigate a complex super app dashboard, I'm just going to defect to a simpler alternative. I'll go use Anthropic's Claude or Google's Gemini.
Well, you've identified the exact paradox they have to navigate. It's this tightrope of delivering immense enterprise power without the user-facing complexity.
Which is really hard to do.
Almost impossible. I mean, history is littered with tech companies that tried to build super apps and failed because the interface just became too heavy.
Yeah.
But if Sotio can replicate the invisible user experience he built for developers, where the tool is there exactly when you need it and it just vanishes when you don't, they win the enterprise market.
And if they fail?
If they fail and it turns into a cluttered mess of drop-down menus, their upcoming IPO could seriously stumble.
Wow. Okay, so OpenAI wants to own your 9-to-5. But there is a completely separate war being fought for your 5-to-9.
Oh, the downtime war.
Yes. The legacy digital platforms are deploying some radical new strategies to capture downtime and, more importantly, your wallet.
Yeah, let's look at Wikipedia first.
Right, so Wikipedia just launched an iPhone game called Which Came First. They rolled it out after testing it on Android. And it's basically this gamified daily historical challenge.
It's actually pretty fun.
It is. You get two events, say, the invention of the telephone and the construction of the Eiffel Tower, and you simply guess which happened first.
And right alongside that, you have Rockstar Games taking a radically different approach to their legacy content.
Which is wild timing.
Yeah, they just added the 13-year-old GTA 5 story mode to their $8 a month GTA Plus subscription service. And they're doing this right ahead of the highly anticipated GTA 6 launch.
I mean, these feel like completely different maneuvers, though. One is an educational nonprofit making a trivia game, and the other is a billion-dollar AAA game developer squeezing blood from a 13-year-old stone.
They definitely look different on the surface, but they are both utilizing sophisticated survival tactics in the modern attention economy.
Okay, how so?
Well, Wikipedia is essentially employing the Wordle playbook. Historically, you know, Wikipedia relies on intent-based traffic. You go there when you specifically need a fact.
Right, like when you're arguing with a friend at a bar.
Exactly. But they know they cannot compete with TikTok or Instagram for your passive attention by just offering long-form encyclopedia articles.
Yeah, nobody's doom-scrolling Wikipedia.
Right. So by creating a simple, highly shareable daily challenge, they're building daily habits. They are making knowledge acquisition feel like play, which secures a recurring slice of your daily attention.
And Rockstar.
Rockstar is using the Netflix strategy. They are taking a game that has already sold 190 million copies.
Which is just absurd.
It's crazy. But it means its standalone sales potential is largely tapped out. So they're using it to lock users into a recurring subscription ecosystem. They want to habituate players to paying them monthly before their massive new release drops.
Wow. These are just brilliant forms of behavioral conditioning. I mean, Wikipedia is translating historical facts into a daily dopamine hit to keep you coming back.
Yeah.
While Rockstar is converting a one-time $60 purchase from a decade ago into an $8 a month forever tax.
A forever tax is a good way to put it.
It really does make you wonder about the future of consumer rights, though. Are we rapidly approaching a point where you don't actually own anything anymore? Your encyclopedia is a daily rental of your attention, and your classic video games are locked behind a paywall.
Well, subscription lock-in is the industry's preferred way to fund these massive digital ecosystems. But, you know, keeping people inside these subscriptions requires a constant feed of new, highly engaging entertainment.
And that's not cheap.
No. The economics of actually building that entertainment are starting to buckle under their own weight. The cost of holding our attention has completely skyrocketed.
Which brings us to a highly controversial proposal from the gaming industry. Matthew Ball, the chief strategy officer over at Xbox, recently floated a proposal to introduce in-game advertising to, quote, save gaming.
This one is getting a lot of pushback.
Oh, massive pushback. He outlines a severe two-sided economic problem. On the supply side, creating a AAA game today requires a budget of over $200 million.
They're like Hollywood blockbusters now.
Bigger, honestly. They take 5 to 7 years to develop, requiring teams of 500 or more employees. But on the demand side, consumers fiercely resist paying anything more than the $70 price ceiling that was established a few years ago.
Yeah, players are very protective of that ceiling.
Exactly. Inflation has hit the cost of making games, but players refuse to let it hit the price tag. So Ball is suggesting optional ad-supported tiers.
Yep.
For example, maybe you pay $40 for the game with ads or $70 for the premium ad-free version.
That's an interesting compromise.
So what does this all mean, though? Look at this from the player's perspective. The entire point of a premium video game is immersion.
Sure.
Imagine you're deep in a climactic Call of Duty firefight. Your heart is pounding, you're coordinating with your team, bullets are flying, and suddenly your screen freezes for a 30-second unskippable Coca-Cola commercial.
Yeah, that would be jarring.
The immersion is instantly shattered.
Yep.
If I pay $40 for a product, I still expect it to function as a piece of art, not a billboard.
It's an economic reality colliding violently with consumer expectations. And, you know, looking at this impartially, the tension is structural. The industry undeniably needs new revenue streams to offset these unsustainable budgets. And Xbox is uniquely positioned to execute this because of their $70 billion acquisition of Activision Blizzard King.
Oh, right. The Candy Crush people.
Exactly. That deal brought them the Candy Crush mobile ad network. So they actually have the underlying infrastructure to serve these ads flawlessly in-game.
But will people accept it?
Well, that's the catch. Xbox is currently operating with a massive trust deficit in the community. They recently hiked Game Pass prices, and their messaging around which games will be exclusive to their console has really frustrated players.
Yeah, there's been a lot of confusion there.
So if they attempt to weave ads into premium games, even if they frame it as optional, they risk driving gamers straight into Sony's ecosystem, which is currently positioning itself as the pure ad-free premium experience.
That makes total sense. You know, this dynamic of an entity burning through its resources so aggressively to create something that it actually starves its own future.
Yeah.
It turns out that's not just a flaw in the gaming industry's business model. The James Webb Space Telescope just proved it's a fundamental mechanism of the universe.
Oh, the parallels here are actually stunning when you dig into the physics.
Let's break down this discovery. It was published in the monthly notices of the Royal Astronomical Society. The James Webb Space Telescope, working alongside the LMA Observatory, has discovered a phenomenon they're calling a galaxy-killing wind.
What a name.
Right. They observe this happening in a young galaxy named Crystal O2, which is roughly 1 billion years after the Big Bang.
So very early universe.
Very early. And the mechanism of how this works is incredible. In these young galaxies, you have periods of intense, aggressive star formation. These massive new stars burn bright, but they eventually explode as supernovae.
As they do.
Right. But these explosions are so violent that they generate winds powerful enough to physically blow away a 7,000 light-year long plume of cold molecular gas.
And that cold molecular gas is crucial.
It's the fuel.
Exactly. It is the nursery. It's the exact fuel the galaxy needs to condense and form new stars.
So it's cosmic irony. It is literally like building a bonfire that burns so aggressively, the sheer force of the flames blows all the unburned firewood completely out of the fire pit.
That's a great analogy.
It effectively starves itself to death by being too productive. But wait, if that's how early galaxies operated, why are we here? Why did the Milky Way survive its own star-forming years?
This raises an important question, and the answer comes down to gravity. It actually solves a massive cosmological puzzle.
Okay.
For a while, the James Webb Space Telescope had been finding these massive dead galaxies in the early universe, and astronomers were baffled.
Because they should have been young and active.
Right. The universe was young. These galaxies should have been booming with new stars. Why were they red and dead so early? This observation of the galaxy-killing wind proves they lived fast and died young because they had relatively shallow gravitational wells.
Oh, so they couldn't hold on to the gas.
Exactly. They simply lacked the underlying mass to hold on to their cold gas when those supernovae winds started blowing. The Milky Way, by contrast, had a deeper gravitational pull.
It was heavier.
Yes. It was massive enough to hold on to its fuel despite the internal explosions, allowing it to continue forming stars for billions of years.
That is fascinating.
And this discovery was only possible by combining JWST, which sees the infrared heat of the stars, with ALMA, the Atacama Large Millimeter Array down in Chile, which is specifically designed to detect that faint, cold molecular gas being blown away.
So they needed both.
Yeah, together they are literally rewriting our textbooks on galaxy evolution.
Wow. You know, as we pull all these threads together for you listening, it is remarkable how consistent this pattern is.
It really is everywhere.
Right. Whether we are talking about an AI agent executing autonomous trades to optimize a crypto portfolio, or OpenAI trying to monopolize your digital workday with an all-in-one super app.
Or media companies like Wikipedia and Rockstar desperate to lock down your daily attention.
It's exactly. Or even a $200 million video game looking for ad revenue just to break even. Everything we've looked at today is furiously fighting for resources. They are all trying to secure their fuel in environments where the competition is only getting fiercer.
And I think that leads to a critical final thought for you to mull over today.
Let's hear it.
We just discussed how those early galaxies died by consuming their fuel too aggressively, triggering a killing wind that ejected the very resources they needed to survive. Now, apply that exact mechanism to the current trajectory of the artificial intelligence industry.
Oh, wow. Okay.
As AI rapidly expands into autonomous super apps and agentic financial traders, it demands exponential, staggering increases in processing power, electricity, and human training data.
It needs so much fuel.
So much. Could the AI industry hit a killing wind of its own making? Could it burn through the world's available data and power grids so fast that it starves its own future development before the technology can fully mature?
That's a haunting thought.
It is a structural limit worth keeping in mind the next time you, casually ask a chatbot to execute a financial trade.
You really have to wonder if we are building the bonfire too big too fast without checking how much firewood we actually have left.
Definitely.
Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the systems, algorithms, and cosmic forces shaping our reality. Keep pulling at the threads of the media and tech you interact with every day, because whether it's a new feature in your workflow or the physics of a distant galaxy, the real story is always in how the machine actually works. We'll catch you on the next one.